Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Commissioner's Court versus Agam.
May it please the Court, Mr. Robert Weber will present argument to the petitioners. Petitioners are under 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. The primary issue in this case is whether or not the state constitution or the local government code prohibits a commissioner's court from delegating the responsibility of preparing county payroll to the office of county auditor. Stated otherwise, the question is whether or not the constitution or the local government code requires or mandates that the preparation of county payroll be prepared by the Office of County Treasurer. Our position is that the Constitution is silent on the matter as to which office or officers should prepare county payroll, and that the legislature does not prohibit the Commissioner's Court as part of the exercise of its budgetary power from assigning that particular task to the Office of County Auditor. And based upon that position, we feel that the Texarkana Court opinion and judgment should be reversed. By way of background, the respondent in this case, County Treasurer Agam, was elected to that office in 1978. Prior thereto, based on the stipulated facts in this case, the task of payroll preparation in Titus County had been historically handled by the county clerk.
Does the record reveal what the size of the payroll is?
Size of the payroll? No, Your Honor, it does not. Subsequent to the election of Mrs. Agam, I believe from 1978 up through about 1987, payroll in Titus County was at various times handled by the county treasurer. It also continued to be handled at times by the county clerk and by the county auditor. It was basically whomever asked to do it at that point in time. But the evidence in this case, as stipulated by the parties, is that for a 9 or 10 year period, the preparation of payroll bounced around from office to office after Ms. Agam was elected. In 1987, the Commissioner's Court appointed a full-time assistant to the Office of County Treasurer, and that assistant was or came to be known as the payroll clerk. That person was, at that point in time, the only other employee of the Treasurer's office. Now, in March of 1994, the accounts payable clerk, who was in the county auditor's office, gave notice that she was going to resign due to her family move to Houston. The commissioners, in amending their budget, decided to combine the duties of preparing the county payroll with the duties of the accounts payable clerk. And they voted upon it, and I believe the amendment to their budget was made March 23 of 1994. In essence, what happened was one person, the payroll clerk in the treasurer's office, was moved across the hall into the office of the county auditor.
A same budgetary end could have been achieved, could it not, if that person who was performing those tasks had been ward treasurer?
Who had been performing the accounts payable?
Right. In other words, you wanted to combine all these tasks into one, and if that one person who was performing all these tasks to achieve the budgetary end had been working for the treasurer, you would still achieve the same result.
Well, we cannot. The Commissioner's Court has absolutely no staffing authority for the staff of the county auditor. And in order for us to accomplish this goal of reducing or eliminating one staff position, the only way in which the Commissioner's Court could accomplish it was in the way in which they did it. Under Section 151 of the Local Government Code, the Commissioner's Court has the power, staffing responsibilities, or authority in county officers or county offices. So they do have that responsibility of determining how many employees the treasurer will have. However, under...
Mr. Trevor, do you agree, though, that the commissioners could not so understaff the treasurer's office that the treasurer could not perform their constitutional function?
I agree with that, Your Honor. But again, and that was a question raised by Justice Grant during the argument in the Texarkana Court, I think you would have to look at the particulars of each county. I think if this was Harris County, where you have obviously numerous employees in the office of the county treasurer, and you may have someone with particular expertise so far as preparing the budget, and you did away with everybody, I think that in that situation, that the commissioner's court might actually be abusing their authority. However, in this case, besides the elected treasurer, the only other officer, excuse me, the only other employee was this payroll clerk.
Well, you suggested in Harris County it might be different if they did away with the whole department, but in fact, in Titus, by removing this one person, didn't they in fact do away with the whole department?
Well, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think the evidence demonstrates that this is certainly a part-time position, because that individual, not only is she preparing the county payroll, but she has resumed the responsibilities of the payroll clerk, excuse me, of the accounts payable clerk in the auditor's office. So, and I think that really addresses the second issue that we raised in this particular case, and that is when the Court of Appeals said, not only is this constitutionally a responsibility of the county treasurer, but the Titus County Commissioner's Court has now been ordered to provide the, quote, essential funding necessary for her to perform her office. Now, we say, and again, I'm addressing the second of the issues, we say that the courts did not have that power to so order the commissioners to make available the, quote, essential funding to the county treasurer. And that goes back to, and obviously there's no case law on this case discussing the constitutional questions, but there is a case, Ector County versus Stringer, that this court wrote in 1992, saying that the district courts cannot substitute their discretion and their judgment for the discretion and the judgment of the commissioners in budgetary matters, provided that that judgment has been acted upon reasonably. In other words, the supervisory power of the courts over the commissioner's court is to determine whether or not they have acted arbitrarily or capriciously. And in Ector County versus Stringer, this court said that the determination as to whether or not the commissioners have acted arbitrarily or capriciously is a question of reasonableness.
What powers does the treasurer have that you believe statutes prohibit the commissioner's court from stripping from the treasurer?
The only, obviously the Constitution is silent. The Constitution simply says that the legislature shall prescribe the duties of the county treasurer.
And I want to know what statutory laws are there that limit the ability of commissioner's court? I'm sorry, that's basically not it. What powers does the treasurer have that commissioner's court cannot take away?
I would say
by statute,
the power to disperse the county funds.
But according to your contention, that basically means signing the checks.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, as one of the stipulations, the opposing side has conceded that the county treasurer continues to fulfill that task.
But still, answer the question about what you think the statutes say.
The statutes simply say that the county treasurer is the chief custodian of the funds, and the county treasurer has the authority. Actually, it says the county treasurer or other officer so specified by law. The county treasurer has the responsibility for dispersing county funds.
So other than the ability of writing checks, it's your contention then that the statutes would allow commissioner's court to strip all other powers, all other functions away from the county treasurer?
Well, there are no other powers or duties or functions specifically assigned to the county treasurer other than the responsibility as chief custodian of the county funds to disperse county monies. Under section 155 of the local government code, sections dealing with payroll deductions for Social Security taxes and contributions to retirement plans. What that statute says is that the county treasurer shall assess and collect. Now, those are by no means exhaustive or exclusive. There are numerous sections under the local government code whereby the county commissioners can delegate other payroll deduction responsibilities to any officer they so deem. For example, in 155.02, payroll requests for payroll deductions must be submitted to the county auditor for contributions, for charitable contributions, or labor union dues. The legislature itself in section 152.051 has used the term county payroll officer to be defined as the county auditor or other appropriate county officer who issues paychecks. Now, I would suggest and concede that section 152 is not particularly applicable, but it does demonstrate the legislature's intent to allow officers other than the treasurer to issue paychecks. We certainly know that in counties with a population over 190,000, in section 154 of the local government code, that the statute says any district, precinct, or county officer authorized to issue paychecks or sign salary warrants may do the following. So the scheme of statutes in this case does not direct to any officer who should or should not prepare the payroll. The point I think that really needs to be emphasized in this case is what is actually being done by this individual in processing the payroll. And what is being done is the payroll clerk receives the timesheets from the various elected officials. He punches that information into the computer and then hits a button to print the paychecks. At that point in time, all of the information, the timesheets, and the checks themselves are then taken to the county treasurer, who verifies the information, signs the checks, and actually disperses the payroll. So what's being accomplished by the payroll clerk in the auditor's office is purely a clerical and ministerial act.
Let me ask you something about the attorney's fees. Both sides have moved for attorney's fees. In either case, would the taxpayers be paying the attorney's fees?
Unfortunately, so far as my representation of the commissioner's court and the county auditor, they certainly were. It was not developed at the trial court level who, in fact, was paying the attorney's fees for Ms. Agan's attorney. That was not developed. I think the key point that we say that the Court of Appeals...
But is it your position that she is entitled to recover attorney's fees that she is awarded, that may be awarded against her from the county? Is she going to be indemnified for her legal bill?
I don't know, Your Honor. That would be something that we were quite surprised that the trial court didn't ask for more explanation. I continue to be uncertain as to whether or not Ms. Agan herself or the Texas County Treasurers Association was responsible for those fees. I simply do not know. If it's a matter of her then going back to the Titus County Commissioner's Court and asking to be reimbursed, if that's what the law is, I think the question is moved at that point, because certainly we will not be doing that. I think that the constitutional question in this matter is to take a look at the Texarkana Court's reliance upon General Maddox's opinions. And I think everybody understands that there is no case law directly on point saying who has the responsibility to prepare payroll. We say that the Texarkana Court's reliance on General Maddox's opinions were flawed for several reasons. General Maddox Well, my time's up, but if I
you
might...
You may take some time away from your rebuttal.
Okay. General Maddox assumed that the Constitution impressed upon the office of county treasurer certain implied duties or functions, and the Constitution does not do that. General Maddox referred to those as the core functions of the office of county treasurer. And General Maddox defined the core functions as those functions that, quote, historically or logically fall within the number of power attached to the office. And General Maddox concluded that the preparation of payroll was such a duty so closely linked to the treasurer's office that it could only be prepared and performed by the treasurer's office, save and except constitutional amendment otherwise. And as we know, there's at least 9 or 11 counties in which the office has been abolished. Now, we say that that reasoning, the concept of implied core functions that can only be performed by the treasurer, is flawed for several reasons. Most importantly is that the Constitution itself allows for the taking away or the sharing of certain responsibilities simply by legislative fiat. And we know in this particular case, the legislature has precisely done so in counties in excess of a population in excess of $190,000. In those, as I mentioned earlier, payroll preparation can be delegated under the terms of the statute to a precinct, district, or county officer. So the point being that if it's not a core function for counties with a population in excess of 190,000 people, it certainly can't be a core function for counties with a smaller population. The second point on that is that certainly Titus County does not fit General Maddox's definition of core function, where he says that historically these tasks fall within the penumbra of power attached to the office, because historically in Titus County we know that it's been shared by a variety of county officers. And just the last point to be made on that, Your Honor, is that the evidence in this case demonstrates that at least 44 counties in the state of Texas do have the county auditor preparing payroll. There was an exhibit attached showing that a survey was performed by the LBJ school, which was responded to by, I believe, 147 counties, and of those, 44 had the county auditor preparing payroll.
You have 2 minutes remaining for your question.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Tim.
May it please the court. The issue presented in this case strikes at the very foundation of the constitutional structure of county government. As we begin to travel through our analysis, there are three important factors that we should constantly keep in mind. First, the county treasurer is a constitutional office. Second, the county auditor is strictly a creature of statute, and by statute is made a district court officer. And third, we need to recall or keep in mind the very reason for the dichotomy both between the county commissioners and the county auditor or county treasurer, and the county auditor and the county treasurer, which is to provide essential checks and balances within the county government structure itself.
Your argument, though, that if you allow the auditor to prepare the payroll, they would be auditing themselves. That is the case in many counties. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's why it's important to keep in mind the structure. Petitioner attempts to offer this court bits and pieces of disjointed parts of the overall structure and ask this court to conclude from those bits and pieces that there's nothing going on that's wrong here. Yet, it's clear, and this court, I'm sure, is aware that what is actually happening here is an attack on a constitutional office by another constitutional office. The problem is, in the auditor's office, the district judge and the district court, of whom he's actually an employee, protect him from the commissioner's court and any intrusion into that area. In the county treasurer's area, the only thing that protects the county treasurer is the Constitution itself.
Bottom line is, if the district judges do not like the job the auditor's doing, they can fire him.
Exactly. They can fire him, or they can control his duties day to day. They can control his staff. They control his salary. They control every aspect of the auditor's office. The Constitution places that burden in the county treasurer's office upon the county treasurer, with minor exceptions to make the overall structure of web work.
But where in the Constitution do you find the duties, prepare payroll, fall in the county treasurer's office?
It's not really that simple.
Well, it's not there.
An issue. Well, we would contend that it's actually there if you look at the structure of county government as set up in the Constitution. Petitioner contends that the Constitution is silent on powers of the treasurer's office. We would contend that's not true. The Constitution mandates that a treasurer's office be created. The Constitution further mandates that the legislature may determine which duties the treasurer shall perform, although that's a common term throughout the Constitution in most offices. The treasurer or the legislature has the ability to define and evolve those duties as we go along. But we would contend...
Does the treasurer have the right, is it accurate that the treasurer still checks the accuracy of the payroll? Would she have the ability to make corrections if she disagreed with the way the payroll was prepared?
And again, that's not really a simple answer. As petitioner is telling you, it's the computer that does the work. It's not anybody else. And then after the computer doesn't work, she just simply needs to sign a check and make sure that the computer put the right number of hours in under the right number of employees. That is not really verification. In order for her to do the verifications required, she is required, so as not to be derelict in her duty, to verify not only the hours, but the salary, the level of deductions, over all the myriad of different deductions that are authorized by statute, federal and state government. All of these things are under her ambit of responsibility, but she has no control over that process of any kind.
What's preventing her currently from checking or verifying?
The county commissioner.
How do they prevent her? Why can't she ask backup?
She
verify
could,
whatever she wants to verify.
Well, the simple answer is if she doesn't have the documentation to prepare the payroll initially and go through that process, then she cannot perform that function. On the other side of that coin, perhaps she could demand from the commissioner that they provide her with all that material and let her do the same thing that the payroll clerk does already and go through all those steps, but they won't do that because they're saying, no, we want to save the budget. Now, they've already determined as a commissioner's court that she needs to have the staff to do that function because the time involved requires an employee, but then they've wrested that employee from her, given it to the auditor, and said, okay, auditor, you do those functions and she can just check over your shoulder. That completely turns on its head the entire structure intended for county government. Petitioner himself admits that they cannot take the part-time employee, which no longer works for the auditor's office in this case, from that office and put it into the treasurer's office because they have no right to staff the auditor's office. And then turns right around and say, but then they're going to delegate to the auditor's office the payroll functions from the treasurer's office.
Do you think there are any limitations on the legislature's power to prescribe the duties of the office of treasurer?
Absolutely. First off, the legislature clearly cannot say we're not going to allow treasurers, we're going to abolish treasurers in all counties by statute. They can't do that. That's violative of the Constitution. Secondly, we would contend that the constitutional mandate that a treasurer's office be created in each or exist in each county requires that a treasurer's office exists in each county. That means that if the legislature comes through and says, well, we decide that the treasurer is actually going to be the county garbage collector. No other duties, all he's going to do is go and collect garbage. Clearly, that's violative of the mandate of the Constitution that a treasurer's office be created. They cannot simply make that office basically a figurehead or a completely different office and simply call the treasurer to try to get around the constitutional mandate. Again, that would violate the structure set up in the Constitution and would be constitutionally infirm. The same thing is happening here with the auditors taking over. First, we would contend the commissioner's court was derelict in their responsibilities by surrendering their power to the auditor, whom they contend they have no supervision over, they contend they cannot staff, they contend they have no control over salary. They simply gave it up to them.
Let me ask you before I pursue this. You say she's standing alone doesn't have, was it not the adequate time to verify the payroll?
She either has the time or the ability. Because of the overall structure, it's almost like a web. The commissioners, the treasurer, and then the auditor, webbed all the way through, is supposed to be able to verify all these functions. If she says, okay, this is what I have to do to perform my constitutional duties, and one of those is I need to have all these papers, I need to have computer program access, control, I need to determine where the deductions are, I need to have these records, and the commissioners say, good, you get it.
Well, what if she had a staff of 5 people, and she says, this isn't enough people to properly perform my function? Does she have a constitutional or statutory right to demand more help from the county commissioner's court? What's the limit on her ability to demand resources for her office?
The statute provides, especially for employees, that she, if she feels she needs staffing, she is then to petition the commissioner's court with proof as to why she needs that staffing. The commissioner's court then determines whether or not staffing is required.
What statute is that?
And I believe Chapter 84, it actually sets up for all constitutional offices. All constitutional officers are required to come to the commissioner's court and establish why they're entitled to additional staffing. Then, the commissioner's court duty is to determine whether or not it's necessary and what budget requirements will be met, and then kicks it back to the constitutional officer, who then has the responsibility for actually retaining that person, hiring them, supervising them, controlling them.
And are you saying that judicial courts have the right and the power to second-guess what commissioner courts do in deciding how much manpower to give to a constitutional office like the treasurer?
No, we're not saying
that at all.
That's
what you're asking us to do, right?
No, we're not. The commissioner's court, as we've contended all along, has already determined that it's necessary to have that manpower to conduct those functions. They're simply saying, we're not going to give it to you. That's not what the statute allows. The statute allows them simply to determine whether the time and work necessary requires a person to be hired. Once that determination is made, it's then the treasurer's job, duty, and right to hire an assistant to do those functions and to pay them what the treasurer or the commissioner's court will allow under that budget. We would continue to set up this way, and if you look at the statute, there is no provision for the commissioner's court to fire those people after they've been retained by the treasurer or the sheriff or whoever. Now, the commissioner's court does have the right to budget, and it probably as part of their inherent power, each year they could require you to come back and prove the need for those officers again before you can retain them for another year. That would probably be part of their inherent power, but there's no ability for them to simply pass halfway along and say, you know, we want to get rid of you. These structures are all in place, and they're all extremely important, even though they may seem unimportant.
How can the commissioner's court be derelict, to use your word, in assigning these duties to the auditor when more than 40 other counties do the same thing?
Two different issues. First and foremost, only if they have the power to assign jobs to the auditor's office in the first place could they do so and then therefore not be considered to be surrendering their responsibility. If it exists, we consider it doesn't exist, but they contend it does. If it does, they cannot simply surrender it to another part of government, the district court's office, through the auditor, and therefore have no control over that office again.
They've got to surrender it to somebody, either the auditor or the treasurer.
If they have the power to do that.
Well, you don't contend that the commissioner's court controls the treasurer.
No.
Well, how do they control the treasurer any more than the auditor?
It shouldn't. That's why I'm saying they're co-equal branches of constitutional government, and the commissioner's court should not be allowed to control the treasurer's office other than as the legislature specifically allows in this web that they created for county government.
But you argue it is a surrender to let the auditor do the payroll. But why isn't it the same kind of surrender to let the treasurer do the payroll?
Because we contend it is part of the inherent powers of the treasurer's office to begin with. We contend, first and foremost, that the commissioner's court has no power, under constitution or otherwise, to dictate the duties and responsibilities of any kind, any constitutionally created office, absent specific legislative requirements, again, in this structure that the Constitution and legislature has created. If it does so, that constitutional office then becomes wholly subservient to the commissioner's court and has no basically check or balance on the commissioner's court, and all we have is a simple dictatorial body in the county, and there's no need for whatever offices they want. That gets back into the budgetary area that we were talking about. It's not a matter of budget. The legislature or the Constitution specifically set up a redundant web. So we have these checks and balances. We have an auditor checking the same thing that the treasurer is checking. We have the commissioner's court spending or budgeting the same thing that the auditor budgets checks. We have the district court checking the auditor to make sure the auditor is checking the right people. These are all there because first and foremost what we're talking about is a public trust.
Is there evidence in the record that she's attempted to verify any payroll and has been denied access to the information?
The commissioner's court has basically said your job now entails we will do the payroll, we will kick it out, we will send you the timesheets that have been handed in by the office and the checks. You can verify that employee didn't put in that time and you can sign it off. The record is not real clear, there's nothing in the record to dictate what that means. Does that mean that they've denied her any access to any other records she's asked for? We don't know. Does that mean that they prohibit her access to the computer program so she can determine that it's actually deducting properly? We don't know. All we do know is that she is by constitution allowed the power to do the things necessary to conduct her office, which specifically includes things like making deductions, taking that deduction money and making checks to the Social Security, to the IRS, et cetera. You know, those are functions that she's been specifically delegated. We don't even have to look at the inherent power of the office. But all of these things the Commissioner's Court has, by doing what they've done, taken out of her hands. Again, we would contend that the public trust, public money requirement, in a business, you can get by with having one comptroller, maybe a yearly audit, because you have somebody in charge of that business who is inherently concerned about the money, the protection of the money, whether it's there, whether it's being misspent or stolen. Since we're talking about county government and a public trust, there is nobody to protect the public other than the structure itself. Okay. That is why there's a requirement for it.
That runs into the fact that several counties have even abolished the treasurer's office.
Exactly.
How do they survive?
And that's what I was getting to. I'm saying there's two parts to your question. Well, there are, and they contend there's 40 auditors that are doing this work, just as in last argument, two wrongs will make a right, 40 wrongs don't make a right either. If that is being done under the structure that we are talking about, however, the legislature
some have abolished the office by constitutional amendment.
The legislature has proposed, and by constitutional amendment, has adopted a different structure. But if we will examine those, we'll find that predominantly those are the larger counties. Those counties no longer have one person, maybe one person, a part-time assistant, who are controlling all county finances or have basically in their hands all county finances, and therefore need an auditor to overlook or have a commissioner's court that runs roughshod over a treasurer and needs an auditor to make sure the commissioner's court's not spending money to improve their houses. In a smaller county, that protection is essential. In a larger county, when you have an auditor's office that requires a staffing of 16 people, massive computers, the auditor and the treasurer both, predominantly in those counties, will be in a supervisory role, making sure that their people are doing what is being done, and they're generally better paid, better qualified, probably accountants or professional people, and they have the expertise to set up the structure. The auditor, even in those situations, is required to set up an overall structure and report that to the commissioner's court and require the commissioner's court to honor that, both in budgeting and spending and in every aspect of finance. That provides the additional structure. In addition, on the larger counties.
Let me ask you about section 155.062 of the Texas Local Government Code. It seems to allow a request for payroll deduction for premiums for health and life insurance to be submitted to a county officer authorized by the commissioner's court to administer payroll deductions. Is that section applicable to Titus County?
I can't tell you yes. I believe it is. However,
if
I don't believe
it is applicable. Doesn't that show some intent on the part of the legislature that requests for payroll deductions can be the person that handles that to be determined by the commissioner's court?
No, we don't believe that that is what that statute contains in any way. Specifically, that statute discusses insurance administrators, I believe it's the insurance statute. There's also a provision for retirement administration, basically their benefit administration plans, as we all know.
But these are payroll deductions. It's talking about payroll deductions.
Well, they're talking about administering the plan, and that's just what they're talking about. And the term administer is key, I believe, in that particular statute. It specifically says you may administer the deduction. It doesn't say you may take the deductions, you may collect the deductions, that you may charge deductions, you may take the deductions out of payroll. It simply says you may administer the deductions. We contend that was intended to give them the right to take those funds, and if they have a pool at the government level, then they can administer the funds to take care of losses, etc. If they don't have a pool, then they can acquire insurance or whatever other things that are set up to allow them to administer that particular benefit plan. But there's a difference between administering a plan or benefit plan and in making deductions and in calculating payroll and making disbursements from the county treasury as required by law.
Okay, Mr. Krajicek, let me ask you, let's assume that the treasurer's office isn't important checks and balances on the commissioner's court. And let's assume that the importance of that is because it double checks any deductions and payroll and all that. And let's assume, though, that the commissioner's court has decided they want the auditor to write all the checks and do all the deductions. Is the record before the trial court and before us, does it demonstrate that the treasurer, Ms. Agan, cannot do her function as she understands her function to be, not the particular key punching, but just for whatever she decides she needs to do as treasurer? Has she demonstrated that she is not capable of performing that function based on the funds allocated to the treasurer's office by the commissioner's court? Do you understand my question?
I do, and the problem I'm having with the question is the assumption that the auditor can do this function. We contend that statute prohibits the auditor from doing it. Now, if you're talking about the commissioner's court's ability to assign it elsewhere within county government, we would still contend that...
Well, you're saying what your... Okay, let's go back to it. Is your case predicated solely on the issue that you don't believe the Constitution permits the commissioners to assign somebody else to write the checks other than the treasurer? Is that what this whole case is predicated on?
No.
Okay. Let's assume the commissioners have assigned the task of writing a check to somebody else other than the treasurer. The treasurer says, my job is to make sure those checks are correctly written. In fact, I have to sign the check, and there's no dispute the treasurer signed it. The treasurer says, I'm not going to sign the check unless I verify all the information that the check writer used. Is the record in this case demonstrate that Ms. Agan is not capable of performing that function as that office is currently funded by the commissioner's court?
Well, first off, it is not our contention. That's the problem here, that she can't write the check itself. The computer actually generates that check, whether she's controlling that office or the auditor is controlling that office in Titus County and in most counties nowadays. It's a question of how the information is acquired, disseminated, verified, run through the system. And that is what she contends she is being denied, because the payroll function has been taken out of her hands and placed in the hands of the person who's supposed to be supervising that work for the commissioner of court.
I guess I'm not making myself clear. That you use the word verification. You say it's easier to verify it if you're the first person to get the information. I'm saying, commissioners say, I want somebody else to get the information first. The treasurer says, my job is to double check. I want to verify. Now, it'd be easier to do it that way. Sure. I'm asking questions. Can the treasurer, but is the record before this court that the treasurer is not capable of verifying that information based on the current funding of that treasurer's office? Is that the record in this case, or is strictly the record, I'm entitled to do the payroll and they've taken away from me, and therefore that's the end of the inquiry?
I believe a fair reading of this record is that she is being denied the ability to verify as she determines necessary in this case. They have said that they have allowed her to verify by providing her the checks to sign with the timesheets, but that is all they provide her. And she has no ability under the current status of things to basically require those things to be provided to her, unless she is provided relief in this case. And therefore, yes, she has been denied first the opportunity to determine what she has to do to verify, therefore to fulfill her constitutional obligation. And second, she has been provided those things other than the timesheet that she believes are necessary to verify. And I believe the record in this case indicates that's exactly what she's provided and that's all she's provided.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Keith.
Your Honor, with my remaining time, I would like to address the issue raised by the respondent that, in some sense, the independence of the auditor in performing his audit duties or his oversight duties is somehow compromised by the arrangement that is in place. That's adopting the reasoning of General Maddox, and we certainly disagree with that. And we say that the best evidence to respond is simply to look at Article 1644, wherein there have been amendments to the constitutional article abolishing the office. For example, in Tarrant, B, Andrews, Fayette, and Gregg County, the Constitution has transferred the functions of the Office of County Treasurer to the auditor. In Gregg County, it goes so far as to say that the functions normally performed by the Office of County Treasurer can be assigned to any county officer or to any qualified person. They can even contract outside and beyond the scope of a county officer. So the point to be made is that if those tasks normally assigned or performed by the county treasurer have and can be now performed by the county auditor, they do not in any sense inherently violate a system of checks and balances.
That took a constitutional amendment to accomplish that.
Yes, but what the legislature has said is whatever those tasks, and the language is specifically broad, it says normally performed, the task normally performed by the county treasurer can now be performed by the auditor. The legislature could not say and do that if that inherently violated any system of checks and balances.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. That concludes the argument in the third cause. The court will now take a 2.5-hour recess and reconvene at 2 o'clock.